Welcome to the Wealth Steading Podcast. I'm your host, John Pugliano, the money manager and founder of InvestableWealth.com. It's August 11th, 2014. This is episode 14. Today we're podcasting from a remote location, and in future episodes we may talk a little bit more about that. But for right now, I'd like to welcome everybody back. As we're a new podcast, we continue to get new listeners each episode. I thank everybody for their participation. If you haven't done so already, I'd encourage you to subscribe at the iTunes store. And while you're there, please don't forget, rate and review the show. That helps out significantly as we try and attract and grow our audience. So I appreciate everybody's help on that. As always, we have a full episode today. We're going to be doing a market review. We're going to be talking about whether the market is still in a correction or whether it's recovering from a bottom. We'll be talking about the long-term secular trend in oil and how I believe that's deflationary and how that might have an effect on other commodities, particularly things like gold. We're also going to cover the global deterioration in bond yields and how that may be affecting your portfolio. And finally, we'll wrap up with a listener-submitted article about corporate buybacks. So let's jump right in and start off with a market review. Now, the market closed down overall last week. However, it was up significantly on Friday. It recovered a good bit of its loss. And as I record this on Monday, August 11th, it looks like the market is up again. However, I do want to caution, as I look over the last 10 or so trading sessions on the S&P 500, I see the days when we had the most selling, the most significant volume, more people coming in and trading stocks. On those days, there were about 4 or 5 days where the market was above average trading. Each of those days when we had this higher trading, those were the days that the market declined in price. However, on the days when the market went up in value, when the share price traded higher, those were generally in lower volume days. There were only 2 days that were slightly above average. For example, Friday had a big price swing. The market was up over 1% on Friday. However, in terms of volume, it was 4% below average. So the turnover, the amount of people that were actually, or the amount of shares that were actually trading hands, was below average, even though the overall share price was up. That's not a bullish sign. At best, it's a neutral sign. We like to see rising prices with rising trade volume. Overall, in this little correction, we're seeing most of the gains that were made in June have been wiped out. The S&P and the NASDAQ both slipped about 4% from the highest peak to the lowest trough over these past couple weeks. Year-to-date performance for the S&P and the NASDAQ are right at about 5%. The Dow Jones Industrial, and that's about flat. So remember, the Dow Jones, that's the 30 top industrial stocks in the U.S. They're flat for the year. But our small companies, the Russell 2000, these are the 2,000 small-cap companies in America. Year-to-date, they're down about 2.5% to 3%. Now remember, it's these small companies where we see our growth. It's these small companies that eventually are going to grow into large companies. And if they're not growing, that's where you see problems in the future. And that's why I have some concerns and some trepidation over where we're at with this current recovery. Also, if these small companies aren't growing, then there'd be less incentive for the larger companies to acquire them. So although we've seen a lot of mergers and acquisitions take place over the past year, and we've seen a lot of new IPOs come onto the market, again, they've got to come from this base of small companies. And if we're not seeing these small companies grow, if we're not seeing their earnings increase, that's a problem. So with the market being up on Friday and coming up on today, it looks like people are coming back in again. And what we talked about before, they're buying the dips. So as the market dips down 3, 4%, people are coming in buying it. So the question is, will it go up higher? Well, from where I sit right now, I'm saying that's unlikely. For right now, I am just skeptical that we're going to keep making new highs. I think there are too many geopolitical issues. I think there's too much uncertainty. Europe's in turmoil, as I've talked about before. Southern Europe could continue to see default and liquidity issues. They definitely have growth issues. We see countries like Italy in recession. The German stock market as of last week was down over 11%. Interest rates throughout Europe don't make any sense at all. The 10-year bond prices coming out of Europe are just incredibly low, historic low levels. We'll talk about those in a minute. So I just don't see a good correlation between commodities, equities, bond prices, and that's why I think we're more likely to see stagnation or a lower market correcting rather than new market highs. Now, I'm not giving financial advice. This is just my opinion. I could be totally wrong, but that's my forecast right now. And if you follow my blog over at investablewealth.com, you'll know that I've moved to pretty much about a 90% cash position. Now remember, over the last year and a half, we've seen extraordinary growth in our stock market. Earnings have been strong. They're holding up. Currently, second quarter earnings for 2014 coming in over 6%. That's all good news. As I look at forecasts in the future, though, the S&P has forecasted for earnings growth to exceed about 11%, which seems very high to me. I think we're more in a 5 to 6% earnings growth. and that's because the economy in real terms is still only growing at about 2%. In fact, the first half of this year, we've only grown 1%. Now that was all blamed on the weather in the first quarter of the year. But the fact of the matter is, for the first half of this year, our GDP only grew at 1%. So I don't know how we can maintain corporate profits in excess of 6% if the economy is only growing at 1 or 2 or even 3%. And as I say, what concerns me even more is they're projecting earnings growth for like the S&P 500 going into 2015 of 11%. Right now, I just don't see where that's going to come from. I think it's wishful thinking. So no, I don't think the economy is going to crash. No, I don't think there's a catastrophe on the horizon. What I'm saying is I'm concerned about the forecast. I'm concerned that people are overly optimistic. We're well beyond a correction. As I've mentioned before in these podcasts, a 10% correction is normal. We usually see that about once a year, about on average about every 11 months we see a 10% correction. We haven't seen anything like that for 2 years, nothing like that since about the summer of 2012. And the concern is that investors get too comfortable. And this is institutional investors as well as retail investors. They get complacent. They think that the market can keep going up forever. They think that there's not going to be any speed bumps. They think that we can grow corporate earnings at 10, 11%, you know, double-digit returns simply by doing corporate buybacks because companies have a lot of cash on hand and interest rates are low. But that can't last forever. And that's why I believe you have to move in and out of a market. You can't simply buy and hold, because at some point we will see a 10% correction. And not only a 10% correction. In a normal market, you would expect to see a 15 or 20% correction. That's not the end of the world. That's not a depression. That's just a normal market. That's normal market fluctuations. The last time we saw a 20% correction was in 2011. So that's 3 full years. This market has been driven by quantitative easing. It's been driven by the Federal Reserve pumping billions and billions of dollars into the market every month. As we talked about before, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet this fall will be approaching $4.5 trillion. That's the cumulative market capitalization of all 30 of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So over these last 6 years, the Federal Reserve has pumped in $4.5 trillion. That's about equivalent to the market capitalization of the largest 30 industrial companies in America. They've injected that into the economy. They've created that money out of complete thin air. That's why we see the corporate buyback programs. That's how we see these financial shenanigans on these companies' balance sheets. The low interest rates distort the pricing mechanism that's inherent in the marketplace, and it can lead to the misallocation of capital. Corporations buying back their stocks when perhaps they should be saving for a rainy day or putting that money into research and development. And that's why it's hard over this past 2 years to really see a definitive trend. No matter what happens, good news, bad news, the S&P 500 keeps going up. That can't last forever. If you look throughout history, stocks fluctuate. They move up and down based on earnings and based on earnings expectations. Well, right now the expectations are that earnings are just going to keep growing and they're going to go up and hit double-digit growth. That seems very hard to believe given where we are in such a soft global economy. Now, what I'm talking about is a long-term trend, a secular trend. Over these past couple of weeks, we've seen the market correct about 4%. So the question we would have in terms of short-term trading is this 4% correction over? So can we come in and buy now that the market's dipped down 4%? Well, it's still too early to tell. When it comes to determining whether we're at a market bottom or not, I like to use Bill O'Neill's method. Now, William O'Neill, he's the author of How to Make Money in Stocks, which is a classic book. I'd encourage you to read that if you're interested in doing your own investing. He's also the publisher of Investor's Business Daily. And I think IBD is a fine publication. I'd encourage you to read that as well. Now, Bill O'Neill's method on determining a market bottom is they want to look for the market to stabilize. So you never jump into the market until you've had at least 4 trading sessions where the market has tried to correct. So the question is, will the market continue to go up from here and make new highs, or will it break through last Thursday's lowest period and go lower? You know, as opposed to just going down 4%, will it go down 5 or 10? You know, will we see a 20% correction? Well, what Bill O'Neill advises is to wait at least 4 trading sessions after we hit a low. That way you have almost a week of trading, and you can look at the volume, and you can see if the market stabilized. Because generally, markets go sideways for a little bit before they break the trend, before they go back either up or down. So right now, this is Monday. The market was up on Friday. So far, it's up today. We will want to see what it does on Tuesday and then what it does again on Wednesday. So by Wednesday, we should get a feel for whether the market has broken through this correction and whether it's now trending back up. Another thing I like to look for when I'm trying to determine whether or not we're at a bottom and whether the trend is changing is where are we at in relationship to the moving averages. Currently, the S&P 500 are all trading below their 50-day moving average. Some listeners have asked where they can see that. An easy way is to go over to Investor's Business Daily. I mentioned Bill O'Neill. The paper that he publishes is called Investor's Business Daily. Their website is investors.com. They have free charts on there. You can bring up the index charts like the S&P 500, or you can bring up individual stocks like Google. You can clearly see on those charts the 50-day and the 200-day moving average. So that's basically our 2.5, 3-month moving average and our 1-year moving average. What you generally see in a stronger market is that the price will come down, it'll hit the 50-day moving average, and then it will bounce up from there as opposed to going through the average. What we saw over the past 2 weeks was that the indexes broke through their 50-day moving average instead of just resting on it and coming up. So right now, that 50-day moving average may be acting as resistance as opposed to support. When you're in a bull market, when you're in a rally, institutional investors have confidence. They like to buy on the dips. So as the price comes down and hits that 50-day moving average, what these institutional investors will do is they'll come in and purchase at that price. When a large number of investors come in and purchase at that price, what does it do? It causes the price to go up, and that's why indexes bounce off their 50-day moving average. Well, that's not what we saw in the past couple weeks. We saw the price break through that average. That meant that the institutional investors didn't have the confidence in the market. Now, it has only gone down 4%. It wasn't a full correction, but it still shows that that 50-day moving average didn't act as support. It wasn't able to hold the price above that level. So now that the indexes are trading below the 50-day moving average, the question is, will that 50-day line act as resistance, act as a ceiling? We're still probably a trading session or two off from knowing whether or not the indexes can break through that 50-day. So again, this is why this is an indicator whether to determine we're at a market bottom or not. As we move into our fourth through our seventh day, coming off a low, if the prices can break through that 50-day moving average, particularly in volume, that perhaps can be a sign that, yes, we hit a market low and now we're moving into new highs. The direction has changed. The momentum is now in the upward swing. But the point I want to make is we don't know that now. That's why I would encourage investors not to just jump into the market right now. Just because the market was up on Friday and it may be up on Monday, we want to wait till Wednesday or Thursday. We want to see if the market keeps making new highs. We want to see if it can break through that 50-day moving average. If it hits that average and drops, then it would be very likely that it will keep dropping. If the indexes hit resistance at that 50-day moving average, then it's likely that the market momentum hasn't shifted, and we're more likely to fall back below that 4% drop than rise above it. I know when we talk about numbers and charts in an audio format, it's very hard to follow. The point I want to make to you is don't rush into a market. Look for a momentum shift. Look for a definite direction of the trend before you think you're at a market bottom. The market makers, the institutional traders, remember, they're playing a game of musical chairs. They like to come in and buy low and sell high. Whenever the retail investor is panicked, whenever Joe Sixpack is out selling his stocks, that's when the institutional traders like to come in and buy. Then they pump those stocks up, they fill the media with why we're in an improving economy and how great corporate earnings are going to be. They lower their expectations so that it makes it easy for companies to beat their earnings. It gets the retail investor all excited, the general public comes in, they buy into the market, we have irrational exuberance. The markets get overbought because retail investors don't understand the relationship between the price and the future earnings expectations. So they pay too much. The valuations get too high. And that's when the point when the institutional investors pull out, right? It's like a game of musical chairs. When the music stops, they're trying to make sure they all have a seat. And it's generally the public, Joe Sixpack, that is the guy left without a chair. You don't want to get caught up in that. So we're going to be patient. We're going to wait out these next few days. We're going to see if we get the market moving up in higher prices, in higher volume, and if the indexes are able to break through those 50-day moving averages. I'll report back on that on our next episode. Now, I mentioned earlier in this podcast that some of my concerns are that I just don't see correlations. And that worries me because when you're in a distorted market, you can't accurately forecast. For example, gold and silver are correlated. They're generally both considered a precious metal. Although silver has more industrial applications than gold, their prices still generally move in the same direction. So a non-correlation would be when you see the price of gold going up and the price of silver going down. That's a non-correlation of two commodities that generally are linked together, generally are very correlated. So when that happens, you know that there's some uncertainty in the market. There's something happening that can't be predicted in your models. And so that puts up a red flag to you that raises concern. Well, I don't see anything as drastic right now as gold and silver not moving together. But what I do see is with all the geopolitical hotspots, with the sanctions over Russia and the possibility of Russia going into Ukraine, with the continued problems all over the Middle East, And I just don't mean Israel and Hamas or Israel and Gaza, but the whole Middle East is a mess. Coup in Egypt still hasn't been resolved. Syria, Libya, Iran. I mean, there are just problems all over that region. That instability over there drastically affects the price of oil. And oil is trading a lot higher than I think it should be, but we've broken that $100 a barrel price. Oil is now trading at about $97 a barrel. Considering all the geopolitical problems we're having with Russia, with Ukraine, with the Middle East, you would think that maybe oil prices should be higher. Throughout all the concerns of Russia, gold has barely budged above $1,300 an ounce. Again, that's interesting to me. That's curious. You would have thought it could have gone higher than that. The price of the U.S. dollar is lower than I would have thought it should have been. Over about the last 18 months or 2 years, the dollar has been on a downward trend. Now, it has come up over the last 2.5 months or so, but not significantly. Not where you would think it would be based on the weakness of the overall global economy. And let me try and explain what I'm talking about. Currencies all float within their price value and their relationship to each other. So generally, the higher the interest rates are in one country, the higher their currency would be. You understand that, right? Let's say that interest rates in Germany were 10% and interest rates in the United States are only 1%. Well, if that was the case, you would take your U.S. dollars, you would convert them into euros, you would take those euros, you would put them in a German bank, and you'd be getting 10% return on your money. Now, if you and everybody else did that, that would create a demand for German bonds. It would also create a demand for euros because that's the currency that Germany trades in. So we know the basic laws of supply and demand. Whenever more people want something that's in scarcity, the price goes up. So that would mean that the euro would trade higher in relationship to the U.S. dollar because the German interest rate is higher. Well, right now, the countries in Europe have extremely low interest rates. I thought they were abnormally low 2 months ago. Well, they've gotten even lower. And although the value of the dollar has risen in recent weeks, like I said, it hasn't risen proportionately, not in my opinion anyways. Now, I'll talk about some European yields here to give you an idea, but what I want you to think about as I do that is the status of these countries. Yes, a country like Germany, it is a very good country. It's a major exporter. It's a major world economy. It's very stable. But like all governments, they do have their problems. They have a lot of debt. They have a lot of growth issues. They have unfavorable demographics. But you can still hold Germany up to a high standard. You can't say the same thing for Spain. You can't say the same thing for Greece. You can't say the same thing for Italy or Portugal. And yet these countries all have very, very low yields on their bonds. In a normal market, that would indicate that investors have great confidence in these economies, that they're not worried about default, that they think that the economies are going to be having rapid growth, and I just don't see that as the case. That's where these disparities come in. That's where things don't correlate. So in the past few weeks, the U.S. Treasury yield, the 10-year Treasury yield, has come down. It was as high as 2.6. Now it's trading for about 2.4%. So if you tie your money up in U.S. 10-year bonds, you tie your money up for 10 years, they will pay you 2.46% a year to tie your money up for 10 years. Now remember, inflation's running at 2%. So basically, you're saying if you put your money in 10-year government bonds, if you tie your money up for 10 years with the U.S. government, you're just going to break even. You're just going to keep even with inflation. But you know what? That's a deal compared to some of these European bond rates. For example, the German Bund, their equivalent of a 10-year bond, it's trading at about 1%. That's 135 basis points lower than the U.S. Treasury. Now again, Germany is a good, stable country, but still 1%. Inflation's running well above 2%, and yet the German government is only paying 1%. Britain's bonds are yielding about equal to what a U.S. Treasury would be. But France is at 1.47. France is a full percentage point below the U.S. yields. Would you want to loan your money to the French government and be paid virtually nothing for it? Literally nothing after inflation? Even Italy is in recession. Italy is a totally unstable government. Italy has no growth prospects. Italy has huge debt. Italy has very poor demographics. And yet their 10-year bond is only paying a yield of 2.8%. It's basically keeping up with inflation. These rates don't make any sense. They don't correlate. Now, I don't have a crystal ball, so I don't know what's going to happen in the future. But what I can do, I can look at the facts as they appear on the ground today. And when I look at the price of gold, when I look at the price of oil, when I look at bond rates, global bond rates around the world, and I look at these interest rates, I can see where they correlate or don't correlate with historical averages. And when I see them not correlating, when I see that there's an anomaly, that raises a red flag. That gives me concern. And again, that's why I don't think that this correction is necessarily over. That's why I'm skeptical that the market has changed direction and we're going to see it go on to new highs. Again, I could be wrong. I don't know. I'm not telling you how to trade. I'm just telling you how to be cautious. And I'm trying to give you some ideas of what you can look for as you read the news, you'll be able to better make your own predictions. And again, I'm not predicting global gloom and doom. In fact, I think there are great things going on in the economy. We just need the Fed to stop creating money out of thin air. We have oil surpluses like never before. If you go over to my website, investablewealth.com, you'll see several months ago where I made some predictions on the economy and where I think the growth areas are. One of them is with natural resources, particularly energy. We have oil and gas reserves like never before. 5-6 years ago, people would have never thought that we have as much energy as we do now. And I'm not just talking about the U.S. I'm talking about worldwide energy. Because of what these small companies have proved they can do in the U.S. with hydraulic fracturing, which is what they call fracking, and horizontal drilling, and other computer and automated techniques, they can extract extreme amounts of oil and natural gas from places like shale or even from old oil wells that they thought were spent. This is an energy bonanza. And although it started in the U.S., and although the U.S. is now becoming the world leader in oil production, it isn't going to stay here. That same trend is going to go throughout the world, and what that will mean is overall lower energy prices. And that's a good thing for the economy, and that's why I'm optimistic on the economy in the long term. That's what we call a secular trend. Right now, we may be going through a correction. Will it be 4%? Will it be 10%? I don't know. Long term, though, I think if government just gets out of the way and lets us explore for oil, these lower energy costs will drive demand and will drive the economy forward. To put this in perspective, North Dakota, the state with barely any population in flyover country in the U.S., they're now producing 1 million barrels of oil a day. That's significant. So they've gone from virtually nothing to producing 1 million barrels a day. To put that into perspective, that's about 70% of what Iran produces. Right? The country of Iran, the place in the Middle East, an OPEC country, some place that we think is just gushing and flowing with oil. Well, our little state of North Dakota is producing about 70% of that output. And think about it. Look at all the turmoil that evolves around Iran. Going back for the last 60 or 70 years, every time there's been any kind of political turmoil in Iran, the price of oil fluctuates because there's problems in the Middle East. Well, look at North Dakota. We're getting 70% of that flow out of North Dakota now, someplace where it wasn't ever before, and no one cares about the politics of North Dakota. No one's worried about a coup taking place in North Dakota and disrupting the flow of oil. No one's worried about border disputes with Canada. That isn't causing fluctuation in the price of oil. See, what I'm trying to point out is these increases in natural gas and oil that we're seeing, that's going to help to produce world stability. If we don't get all of our energy out of the Middle East, we won't have to worry about all that instability. We won't have to spend all that money on defense. We don't have an army or a navy defending the oil coming out of North Dakota like we do the resources that we spend protecting the flow of oil coming through the Persian Gulf. That's significant. And the fracking and the horizontal drilling is going worldwide. It's going into offshore production. We're going back to old wells. We're going to pull more oil out of them. That's only going to bring the price of oil down. I think it could easily drop 25%, if not more. And the good news is, when that happens, it lowers the price of everything, because our entire world is based on energy. Energy fuels the free economy. With lower energy costs, it costs less to build houses, it costs less to build buildings, it costs less to heat and cool those buildings, it costs less to produce steel, it costs less to produce agricultural products. The price of everything will come down, and thus, if oil can come down 25% or more, that means overall we'll have lower commodity prices. Now, the talking heads on TV and the people in the government, they're all afraid of deflation. They're worried about deflation. Not me. I see deflation as a growing economy. Look at the markets that have flourished over the last 30 years. Computers, software, telecommunications. Because of Moore's Law and other technological advances, you know that your cell phone, your computer, every 6 months, every 18 months, the one you have becomes obsolete because a better, a faster, a more improved version comes onto the market at the same or a lower price. We've seen the advances in technology. We've seen the advances in computing and smartphones and telecommunications. Because of deflation, the price for goods and services have come down, or the price has remained flat while the quality has gone up. Deflation is a good thing. Again, that's why overall, long term, I see an upward secular trend. I'm excited and looking forward to a bright future, not one of gloom and doom. I think if the price of oil comes down, this will affect all economies and all commodities. Even gold, for the people that are worried about inflation, gold isn't guaranteed to always go up. Now, I know people right now are saying, well, at $1,300 an ounce, you can barely pull gold out of the ground for that. It's just, that's basically at, you know, production costs or maybe at $1,100 or $1,200 an ounce. So the price of gold can't go below that. Well, that's production costs today. You have to remember, for the last couple of decades, the price of gold has been shooting straight up. And because you had increasing gold prices, you built a lot of fat and a lot of slack, a lot of laziness into the system. So mines that weren't productive or mines that weren't using modern techniques could still stay in business because the price of gold was going up. that allowed for a lot of inefficiencies. As the prices move down, it's going to cause less efficient mines to close. Operators that can't produce efficiently will go out of business. When you have more efficient production, you have better productivity. That stabilizes and will lower the price of gold because mines will become more competitive. And if oil can actually drop 25% or more, that makes the acquisition cost of the gold even cheaper because now the energy that you need to extract the gold costs less money. If extraction of gold costs less money, the price of gold will go down. So again, that's why I think long-term, a long secular view, we're going to see stable to decreasing prices in commodities unless government policies get even crazier than they are today. Now let's finish up for today with a listener-submitted article. This comes from a good friend of the podcast, Eric. Eric has submitted an article about Caterpillar stock buyback. We often talk about buybacks and how, although they do put money back in the hands of shareholders, they are part of the overall financial shenanigans and the balance sheet engineering, which has made these last 2 years very unpredictable with the stock market. Because corporations have bought back their shares, it inflates and distorts their corporate earnings. It makes them look like they're getting higher growth than they really are. And that's why you have to be concerned. Remember, the market has a price discovery method. When you see something going up, you think it's going up because it's getting better. But if it's going up because it's being financially manipulated, that can cause you to make the wrong decisions and misallocate your capital. So Eric sent in an article about Caterpillar, which said that Caterpillar has announced that they will be continuing and accelerating their stock buyback program. For this year, 2014, they will buy a total of $4.2 billion, right? $4.2 billion of their own stock. They're going to buy that back. That's about 6.5% of the overall shares that are floated in the marketplace. So what that is that's stock deflation. They had 626 million shares of stock in the marketplace. There were 626 shares that were floating out there, available for investors to own. They're reducing that by 6.5%. They're taking over 40 million shares off the marketplace. But what that does is it allows Caterpillar, whose earnings are flat, to really look like they're growing. They'll be able to report 4 or 5% earnings growth. At the same time, their sales are decreasing by like 3 or 4% a quarter. That's how they do these shenanigans. That's how they do this balance sheet engineering. It's been estimated that in the stocks in the S&P 500, in the past year, about 4% of shares have been withdrawn. So you look at all the billions of dollars in the S&P 500, 4% of those stocks have been bought back, have been repurchased. That's not growth. That's deflation. Do you remember when the economy was growing rapidly? What would companies do? Did they buy back their stock? No, they had stock splits. As these companies were growing and making real profits, instead of taking the shares off the market, they were actually creating more shares. They were actually selling more shares because their companies were growing and expanding. The overall economy was growing and expanding. And that's not what we see today. And that's why I'm concerned in the short term. I thank Eric for sending that article in on Caterpillar. I'd encourage others of you, if you see something interesting, send it over to us. If you have a comment, something you think can make the show better, let me know about it. If you have a question, something you'd like me to research and answer on a future podcast, send that in as well. You can do all these things at our website, wealthsteading.com. Again, I'd like to welcome all the new listeners. I'd like to encourage those of you that haven't subscribed to please go to iTunes and subscribe. And also, don't forget, rate and review the show. Give us a 1-star, give us a 5-star. No matter what you do, go out there, rate the show. That will help create interest in the show and drive more audience for us. I'd appreciate your support on that. As always, I'll be watching the markets for you. We'll be back in a few days to determine whether the market has broken through that resistance of the 50-day moving average and what kind of momentum we see in the marketplace. For now, though, let's sit back and wait and see if the indexes can break through those 50-day moving averages. As always, I'm wishing you the best of the returns. This is John Pugliano. Thanks for listening.